Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
There are some broad recommendations related to pesticides that were really valuable, and also recommendations related to food waste. You know, I think, you know, cattle producers, livestock producers get a lot of negative press related to climate change, when in fact, food waste is the largest emitter of greenhouse gas emissions when we talk about food and ag in the United States.
Mary Thomas Hart is with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association on dealing with EPA.
And so any effort to reduce food waste is going to reduce the environmental impact of the food and ag industry as a whole. And we really appreciate EPA and the FRCC's recognition of, you know, food waste being an issue that we should address, you know, collectively.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Overall, we're forecasting food price inflation to be between 2-3%. For food away from home, we're looking at 3.5-4.5 is our prediction. And for food at home, our forecast range is between 1.5-2.5%.
That's Matt McLaughlin, an economist at USDA, with the new USDA 2022 food price forecast, starting with the expected increase for all types of food taken together. Now, when you break it down just a bit more, we do see that dairy products and fresh vegetables in particular had significantly slower price increases in 2021 than 2020. Dairy product prices increased at 1.4% in 2021 versus the 4.4% increase 1 year earlier. Fresh vegetable prices up 1.1%. They were 2.6% higher in 2020. Now, six food categories did increase in 2021 at a faster rate than in 2020. That was fresh fruits, also meat prices, and we saw a few others move higher as well. Forecast for all food categories available from the Economic Research Service's Food Price Outlook. Of course, we've got to get the food here, right? Well, according to Jay O'Neill with O'Neill Commodity Consulting, the dry bulk ship owners are now asking, are we there yet? Relating to whether markets have hit the bottom. We talk about supply chain disruptions and increased container prices and shipping prices, but it's been a very rough start to the year and rates dropped lower than anyone expected, O'Neill explains. Panamax grain rates from the U.S. Gulf to Asia have dropped $8 per metric ton in just the last 3 weeks. Now we also have the Chinese Lunar New Year, which started this week. It's the year of the tiger. And he says the best hope for ship owners is the tiger will awaken in the second quarter, bringing stronger demand for the balance of this year. Remember, when we're talking about the demand, that would be Chinese demand for U.S. bulk grains. Well, we have a new sign up for the Conservation Reserve Program. This is according to USDA. As the general sign up runs through March the 11th. Now the grassland CRP sign up runs April 4th through May the 13th. Both producers and landowners enrolled 4.6 million acres into CRP signups last year. That included 2.5 million acres in the largest grassland CRP signup in history. There are currently 22.1 million acres enrolled, and FSA is aiming to reach the 25.5 million acre cap, which was set by Congress in for 2022. Again, the CRP sign-up is running, general sign-up, through March the 11th. Now, one thing that does not have a deadline anymore, following a Supreme Court decision, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or we commonly refer to them as OSHA, announced last week it's withdrawn the COVID-19 vaccine or test emergency temporary standard. OSHA issued that back in November, mandating employers with 100 or more employees were required to get COVID-19 vaccinations. It's Agriculture Today.
The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is the definitive voice of cattle producers in our nation's capital. NCBA is working on behalf of its members to protect your operation from government overreach and rising taxes. But the cattle business is under pressure, and we need every producer to join us to protect our way of life. Join NCBA today and help us protect the future of your farm or ranch. Visit NCBA.org or call 866-233-3872 for more information.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
In 21, we had a 9.3% increase. And in 2020, we had a 9.6% increase in beef and veal prices. The 20-year historical average, which incorporates those very high numbers of the last 2 years, is 4.4%.
USDA economist Matt McLaughlin with a look at the trends in retail beef prices. It's a great place to segue to the cattle market, which is already starting off the year in a pretty strong position. The returns to feeding cattle in the black, as is the profitability right now for cow-calf producers. But that said, producers might want to keep an eye on several potentially influential factors that could dictate the market's fortunes in the new year. Kansas State livestock economist Dr. Glenn Tonzer first points out that lower cattle supplies will remain supportive of good prices.
Later on the point in the cattle cycle and discussion of where the herd has stopped growing, exactly how much it's going to shrink, and exactly how many fewer animals we harvest in the next few years is going to be the discussion on the supply side. So everybody's expecting shrink, but how much shrink is what to watch. We'll get an updated indicator of that in the January cattle inventory report. So here at the end of the month, heifer retention numbers and the like by state will come out. I personally think the herd has shrunk, but maybe not as much as some others. Similarly, we have indication that more near term here for 2022, pig cattle slaughter might be down another 3% compared to 2021, and that is leading to higher cattle price expectations.
Beef demand had a good run of it in 2021, both domestically and in export sales. Tonzer says one should not assume a repeat this year, although at the moment the indicators look favorable.
I'm optimistic that the export demand strength will persist. We probably won't have year-over-year growth the way we've had it, but I hope we can hold some of that strong, you know, billion-dollar sales in some months kind of numbers. Something in that arena would definitely help the aggregate industry. So we can watch for that here as 22 progresses a little closer to home. I suspect we're towards the end, or maybe we are past, the vast majority of residents getting federal aid in the spirit of COVID relief. Exactly what that does to the amount of cash that's on hand, again, disposable income for higher protein purchasing, is worth watching. We're in the midst of an ongoing discussion of another COVID variant that adds continued domestic uncertainty on the retail versus food service balance and foot traffic and the like. So I think we're starting the year certainly with supply fundamentals that are helpful and demand fundamentals that are helpful, but I think there's more and more uncertainty growing on the demand front of the two.
He does say there are a few hard-to-predict wild cards that could influence market direction.
The question mark is, will inter-industry debates subside? There's a lot of what you could label infighting within the vertically connected beef cattle industry. Lots of discussion about how many plants, what plants will be opened, what's the role of the federal government in subsidizing or incentivizing those and the like. Partly as cattle prices come up, that'd be a natural thing for an economist to expect.
That's Kansas State livestock economist Dr. Glenn Tonzer. Let's go, though, from markets to, well, potential challenges. Mary Thomas Hartz with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association talks about a comment period with EPA.
We've put together a comment that members can sign and submit to EPA during this open comment period. And I think it's really important that as many cattle producers as possible, you know, let their voice be heard in this comment period. We have to make sure that those voices are heard, that cattle producer voices are heard. So you can sign our comment at ncba.policy.org. Again, that's ncba.policy.org.
It's Agriculture Today.
One of the directors of feedlot operations here at Freona Industries, it's important for us to be partner with people that understand the business and understand the challenges we face. And as we've grown from 4 to 6 to 8 yards, Capital Farm Credit has been there every step of the way. They understand the agriculture industry, understand the ebbs and flows, the trends, the economics, but more importantly, understand the cattle feeding sector and have been extremely good partners for us to work with. And hopefully that partnership gets to solidify even more.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
This is Agriculture Today.
Since Bob Nichols was forced to retire for health reasons, I've looked after the disease and nematology research effort. And that's probably where I think we have some of the biggest success stories.
Dr. Cater Hake is Vice President of Agricultural and Environmental Research with Cotton Incorporated on some major wins in 2021.
Everyone's familiar with COVID and viruses, and we had a serious threat come into cotton called cotton leaf rolled war virus, and marshaled the troops and really understand that it causes lots of symptoms and you could detect it just about everywhere, but the yield impact is very limited. It's just in the coastal states of the Southeast, and even there it's really minor. So I think we understand that a lot better. And, you know, if it does rear its ugly head, the breeders are advancing with developing resistant varieties. So if it does come back, so I think that's a success. You know, another one is bacterial blight. Boy, that was a big problem. I think in around 2010, we had a resurgence of it. And due to some really great work out of Texas, they've been able to identify the commercial varieties with resistance and encourage the companies to create more high-yielding varieties with resistance to bacterial blight. But almost as important to that is that we now have Plan Bs and Plan Cs coming along in case another race of bacterial blight comes in or the race we have starts to mutate like the viruses.
Talks about fungi issues nationwide.
We've got some serious threats with fungi that I think we've gotten ahead of. A couple of them are things, the foliar, like target spot in areolate mildew or ramularia. We have a belt-wide effort to monitor that and to address it. I know those are not big issues in the Southwest, but boy, they sure are in the Delta in the Southeast. Those foliar fungi, the soil fungi are the ones that are the biggest threat for the Southwest. And obviously, the Fusarium race 4. Boy, so much has been done in the last 3 years. We have both private breeders and public breeders that have released resistant germplasm, or at least highly tolerant, from multiple backgrounds. And this is before that pathogen is really spread throughout Texas. It's restricted. So I think we're protected from that. If it breaks out, I think that we got some of the tools, at least, to try to keep yield loss to a minimum.
On verticillium wilt, or just vert?
Vert, you know, which is also a fungi. The scientists are doing an awesome job at evaluating the tolerant varieties to it, and that's always the best solution, and that's available every single year.
And nematodes.
Great success there, too. You know, we've had a resistance that was created by the public scientists for root knot nematode. Two-gene resistance is now widely out there and being offered by companies, but a brand-new nematode, reniform nematode, the public sector released tolerance to that. And that was put out to all the companies at no cost. And we're now seeing that multiple commercial seed companies are offering both root knot nematode and reniform resistance. And again, we got a whole bunch of Plan Bs for those as well. So I feel good about where we are with diseases and nematodes.
It's Agriculture Today.
What can you get for 2 cents these days? How about new, more efficient wheat varieties? Better market access for Texas wheat producers and increased demand to your product. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Board achieves these goals by investing producer contributions to promote wheat through research, education, and market development. Who knew 2 cents could be so valuable? A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Board.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from America. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Folks are thinking about using it as a way to show, for instance, in the food supply, it came from this farm, it went through this process, this is how much added cost there was, etc. So it's more of a quality measure, and that would give consumers confidence.
Beth Ford is the CEO of Land O'Lakes, speaking at the National Governors Association's winter meeting in Washington, D.C. over the weekend, and talking about blockchain and ag.
But still, it's not really embedded yet in the value chain, because you really need more people involved and more partners involved in that. So while there might be more discussion of it, it is not central, at least in the food supply. It is thought of as potentially a marketing advantage.
But a major key of making blockchain work is the ability to have access to the internet. And in areas of rural America where we don't have that, we call this, the lack of internet, high-speed internet, the digital divide. So how do we bridge the digital divide? Gina Raimondo is Secretary of Commerce.
I was quite involved in negotiating the broadband component of the law with Congress, and as a former governor, felt very strongly flexibility was necessary for exactly the reason that you said. You all have broadband inequities in your state, and they're different in every state, so the solution has to be different. So I want every one of you to stay in close touch with me and my team as we go through this, to make sure that every state is going to have to put together a state plan that speaks to the needs in your state. And so I can't say that enough. Secondly, a huge part of the reason that ISPs and others don't serve every community is because there hasn't been enough money to be made in those communities, if we're really honest about it, which is the whole point of this $65 billion. So we need to all structure the implementation of this money to make sure that we provide enough of an incentive for ISPs and other providers, municipal providers, middle mile providers, co-ops, nonprofits, etc., to actually lay the fiber or do the fixed wireless or do the technology in these communities that have heretofore been untouched. And that is the challenge before us, and we have to make sure that this, too, will be a public-private partnership. In order to get this money, they are going to have to put skin in the game themselves and ensure to us that they will reach these communities that are more expensive to reach, and that they will do so by providing affordable plans, you know, as we go forward. So it's an excellent point, and I think kind of a key principle of the whole way we're going to implement it.
Another member of the cabinet, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
The infrastructure bill, the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act, provides an additional $2 billion for USDA. So over the course of 2022, you're going to see additional announcements concerning the availability of those resources to significantly improve broadband access. Now, that goes along with the other $63 billion that's provided to other departments of government to expand access to broadband, much of which will occur in rural and remote areas. So excited about the opportunity to get that technology in the hands of producers.
That's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
A lot of producers are getting communication from FSA, you know, and USDA, asking them to kind of come in and look at making those ARC and PLC decisions. The deadline for that is actually March the 15th, which coincides with our crop insurance sales closing dates as well.
That's Sean Wade with Plains Cotton Growers on the ARC PLC decision under the 2018 Farm Bill.
This is the time of year when producers need to be really gathering up as much information as they can when it comes to, you know, what are price forecasts looking like? What is that weather situation shaping up to be? And there's no need to rush into this decision because it does make a really big impact on how your safety net's going to look for 2022. And in order to help producers, you know, make these decisions, there's a variety of resources out there.
That's Sean Wade with Plains Cotton Growers. But since we do have only till March 15th to make any changes to that safety net program for this year's crop production, Where can you get some ideas on what decision is best for your operation? Well, there's actually a few online tools. Robin Reed is a Kansas State University agricultural economist.
Be signing up by March 15th of this year, and that'll be for the 2022 harvested crop. And then those payments aren't made until October of 2023. So you're making a selection on a crop that is in the ground now in case of wheat, or you haven't even planted yet in case of corn or soybeans, really a year and a half out until we actually get this payment that we're making the decision on now.
And she says she's just updated the Kansas State ARC PLC decision tool, plugging in the pertinent new USDA data that impacts the possible payout for each.
Data was released setting the benchmarks for the ARC County program, and when those are released by USDA, then we can put out what I call the trade-off is, what program would be better, ARC County or PLC. And that is available now on our website at agmanager.info. But basically what it tells you is at the different marketing year prices that could occur for 2022-2023 marketing year, what would the PLC payments look like? In the case of ARC County, we're looking at what's the county yield going to come out at for 2022, and then what's the marketing year average price, comparing that revenue to the revenue guarantee, and then what's the difference? Will there be a payment?
Considering what the current numbers are saying, Reed talks about the prospects of receiving either an ARC or a PLC payment on the 2022 harvested crops, and with historically high grain prices, at least right now, she says chances of a PLC payment very slim.
That happen? Not likely, as we see the commodity prices we have now, to get a PLC payment. But that ARC County program is fairly sensitive to the county yield. So if we do have some drought issues this year, we have a lower county yield, those ARC County payments could kick in. You know, in a nutshell, if producers are worried about catastrophic price loss, getting back to those PLC reference prices, then, you know, stay with the PLC program. If you don't think there's a chance that we'll ever get to those low prices again, ARC County is probably the way to go just because of that chance of a payment if we have a catastrophically low county yield.
Find that tool online at agmanager.info. It's Agriculture Today.
AquaYield regional agronomist Dr. Tracy Carrillo talks about using NanoPro to improve your burndown.
NanoPro is a nanoliquid technology that grabs the molecules of your burndown herbicides. It enhances the delivery of your herbicides, making them more efficient. You oftentimes see a 3-to-1 return on investment. This will stretch your chemical use up to 30%, which means you're saving more money, especially with the availability and volatility of chemicals these days.
Find out more at AquaYield.com.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with Strong Cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
This is Agriculture Today.
So think about technology adoption with the early adopters and kind of think of your bell curve of, okay, who follows suit.
Neil Dahlstrom is author and manager of Archives and History at John Deere.
You've got a lot of early machines that didn't do what their makers said they did. So there's a lot of growing pains with that. You've got infrastructure issues to deal with. If you buy a new machine and it breaks down, who do you go to for repairs? You know, you have to have trained mechanics. And when every machine's different, when there's no standards in place, it's all confusing and complicated for consumers. So that's a big part of the story as well.
In his new book called Tractor Wars, he talks about why Henry Ford might need to get the credit for today's tractor.
It's really an interesting story, and I took the approach of trying to get behind the scenes. Who was working together? Who was making decisions? For example, at John Deere, when William Butterworth became the company's third CEO in 1907, some of the credit agencies and bankers said, yeah, we don't think he's going to be very successful. He's not really cut out for this. International Harvester, a different story. Alexander Ligg, who grew up on a farm and spent time as a cowboy, was a salesman, worked his way up through the company, and really just kind of accelerated the growth of the farm tractor and International Harvester as a company. But the book is very much centered around Henry Ford. He introduces his Model T in 1908 in October, and only a month later, he sends a short letter and a photo to the Farm Implement News, which was an ag publication, and said, this is an experimental tractor I'm working on. Well, the Model T was so successful, he stopped taking orders. He sells 11,000 in the next year, and people start to take notice, and they say, oh, maybe there's something with this tractor thing if Henry Ford's going to do it. Well, the other thing that happened is you're going to wait because you like your Model T, so I'm going to wait for a Ford tractor. So it kind of slowed things down. Then when he finally gets into production during World War One, he sends tractors over to Great Britain, about 6,000 of them. So it's really not until 1918 when he introduces the Ford in the United States that the industry as a whole really accelerates.
Ford had a 75% market share in tractors and lost it. It
has a lot to do with the automobile industry. By the mid-1920s, Henry Ford has 75% market share for his Fordson tractor. He keeps telling everyone he's going to build a million a year. He barely gets over 100,000, which is still an incredibly significant amount. But what's happening by the mid-1920s is he's losing market share every year in the automobile business. Other manufacturers are passing him by. The Model T, which he says is a perfect automobile. It was perfect in 1915, but not so much in 1925 or 1926. His son Edsel finally convinces him to develop a new tractor or a new automobile, or at least to prove it. The other side of that is Henry Ford lost $100 on every tractor he sold. So he was not in it for profit. He was in it because he thought it was important to the industry. Remember, he's a farm kid. He grew up on a farm outside of Michigan. He first saw a steam engine on wheels when he was 12, and his lifelong dream was to build tractors. And he often said he was trying to remove drudgery from the farm and hard labor from the farm. So it was very much a labor of love, but he had to sacrifice that in order to regain his automobile empire. And that happens when he drops out, at least domestically, in the late 1920s.
The book, Tractor Wars. It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
How has the drought affected the nation's winter wheat crop?
Last year's winter wheat crop, the one that was planted in the fall of 2020 and harvested in 2021, a lot of that crop made it through before the drought got intense across the Great Plains.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says drought then settled into places like Montana and the Dakotas.
So that really hit some of those spring wheat crops, durum, barley, and so forth. But unfortunately, the drought spread as we headed into the winter wheat planting season in the fall of 2021, and that led to a much more widespread problem than what we saw earlier in the summer, as the drought not only continued in the north, but expanded into some of the southern production areas.
In other words,
worst drought that we've seen in this region in about a decade, and we've still got a long way to go to try to turn the corner. Spring rains will be imperative in helping to improve this crop.
This is Stephanie Hope in Washington, D.C.